Help! I Suck at Dating with Dean Ungler, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hello and welcome back to Help, I Suck at Dating. I'm Dean Ungler. This is episode 5, and I have a very special guest in studio with me today. You know him. You love him from Rachel's season. Eric Bigger, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey!
There he is.
I'm in the building. How you doing, Dean? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man.
How's
Thanks
your
for
heart?
Coming. Heart's full. Heart's ready to, you know,
go.
Continue pushing through. Eric, do you mind just introducing yourself to everyone that maybe isn't as familiar with the show?
Hey, so I'm Eric Bigger, second runner-up from Rachel Lindsay season. And me and Dean was in Dallas together before I took off for Spain. And then I went home, and now I'm here. And a journey continues.
We're live. Let's do it.
Well, thank you.
I also do want to mention at the top of this podcast, I mentioned briefly to the producer and Eric as well, this is the 11-year anniversary of my mother passing away this week, so I'm a little off, I'm a little emotional this time of year, so if you guys sense some of that, I just wanted to at least put that out there. But Eric, let's dive into a little bit about what you take a lot of pride and joy in, which is great, and I know we talked about it a lot during our season, astrology and like kind of how astrology plays into dating and even just relationships in general.
Yeah, so, you know, from my point of view, I always seek to understand and to be understood. You know, we are who we are for a number of things. With you, Dean, you know, you're Aries. Mm-hmm. So you're a fire sign. You might lack patience at times. You like to be in control. But also, you are a sweetheart. So when it comes to Aries, you're more so or more compatible with someone who's fire just like you.
Okay.
A Leo, Sagittarius. But you're really compatible as well with an air sign. With someone who's a Gemini and an Aquarius.
Okay.
You know? So I think for you, it's about a person understanding you and giving you your space, but at the same time, letting you lead as well. So you might not like when someone's telling you what to do all the time or pushing you. You might not like that.
Don't like it very much.
Right. So you need to understand that about yourself.
But what's weird about that is because I am stubborn, right? And I do like to push back when people tell me to do things, but I also very much appreciate the direction that sometimes people offer.
Right.
So how do you find the happy medium between that? Because I will so quickly say no to someone when they're telling me to do something for myself, but I'm also very much open to the idea of someone kind of like guiding me through certain things or like someone suggesting something. I like structure when it's kind of given to me, right? But I don't like to kind of abide to people's rules, that type of stuff.
So is, you know, being vulnerable with that person. So the thing about people who are air signs, they have a great way of communicating. So they know how to get you to do things that they need you to do in a diplomatic way.
Okay.
So think of someone you might be close to who's an air sign, not with all signs. You know, Amy is Aquarius, so she's really good at delegating in a healthy way sometimes.
Amy, the producer of the podcast.
I don't like to get on Dean's show, but I will say he hates when I tell him what to do.
Yeah.
But part of him
needs it.
He needs it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's balanced. Yeah. But I think with you, it's all about being honest, being open, and being vulnerable and understanding, like, I don't like when you say that like that. Or just be completely honest about your feelings.
Okay. What's under you? I'm an Aries.
I'm a Pisces.
You're a Pisces. So what does Pisces say about you?
Very emotional, very sensitive, very empath. I like helping people.
Okay.
You know, I'm an emotional person. I think that was one of my struggles on the show because I was trying to get Rachel to be emotional from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't, so I felt like, well, maybe she doesn't want to be with me.
And Rachel's an Aries, I think?
She's an Aries Taurus mix, so
she's right on the cusp.
She's like earth and fire, yeah.
April 20, I think, is, yeah, right.
April 21st.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed. all right, so does...
And patience, man. Patience for you could be tough sometimes.
Patience.
Yeah, because you want it like right now. You want to do it like, let's go now.
You don't think that's just a millennial thing? That's
No, that's like Aries. They're like the born leaders. They're like the baby of the leaders. Like,
okay.
They don't have patience.
So that's the weird thing about me too, is I love being in control and being the leader of a situation, but at the same time, like,
and you're competitive as well.
Competitive, very competitive. Yeah. But at the same time, I kind of like the direction and the order and this is what you should be doing.
I just think for you, direction needs to come in a healthy way. Like, so, you don't want someone controlling you or telling you what to do if it's not unhealthy or it's demanding.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't like, it's funny because you probably don't like when someone's like you to them.
In what way?
So you might be like, go over there and get me that drink and then come back. I have someone to take some pictures with you. But you might not even know that you're doing that.
Oh,
it's just subconscious.
I hope I don't do that.
No, I'm just saying it might not come off that light.
Okay.
But you direct. You're a leader, so you tell people what to do without even trying to tell them what to do. If that makes sense?
Yeah,
Hey, can you come over here and take this selfie with me? Like, I need you to... And you just do it just so naturally. But that's just who you are. It's okay.
Okay.
or leader. You know?
Well, so how about yourself? How do you kind of handle those types of situations? And you said you're a Pisces, so you're a little bit more empathic, right? So,
yeah.
So what does that say about you?
Well, so for me, it's more about, I don't mind taking direction because I have that problem too. When people tell me what to do, it's all about how you speak to me.
Okay.
I don't mind working with someone or working for someone, but it's all how you talk to me.
Right.
And so I think that's important for a lot of people, but some people, they just want to be the boss. They want to be in control. Some people want to control. I had that at some point, but I just try to understand who I'm dealing with. Once I understand, so I know you're Aries, mm-hmm. and I know you like to be in control. I know you're a leader. You like patience, so I would know how to talk to you and deal with you.
When did you start getting into this whole astrology thing or like just this whole mindset?
Well, I think it's like 4 years ago, you know. Okay. I was just doing a lot of research on myself, trying to understand, why am I this way? Why do I think like this? And why do I have these aspirations mm-hmm. and ambitions? Like, who is this and why? And I start going deeper and I'm like, oh, you know. And so what people don't, I don't say people, some people don't know, you have three signs that make you up, right?
Okay.
So your first is your ascendant, which is your rising sign, how you come off. So that's more like your personality to when people see you.
Right.
Then you have your moon sign, which is like your mood. And then you have your sun, which is your Aries. So for me, my sun sign is a Pisces, but my rising sign is a Libra.
Okay.
So I come off like a Libra, I'm balanced, I'm charming, I'm cool. But my moon sign is a Sagittarius. So it's like, I like to initiate, I like to take action, I like that. That's the fire in me, like let's go.
What's your ascendant sign?
That's Libra.
Libra?
Right, so ascendant is rising.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Like how you come off.
Right.
So you might have, I don't know, if we do your natal chart, you might have a water rising mm-hmm. or earth rising. So you might get along with someone who's a Scorpio mm-hmm. because your rising might be Cancer because those are two water signs. So it's different for everybody. But once you get deep into your chart, you know, and your natal chart is basically a chart where you have your full name, the time you were born, where you were born, and your date. And so you get all these signs. So then you have your Venus planet, which is your love sign.
Okay.
Jupiter, which represents money. Mercury, which is communication. So it's so many different elements that make up a person mm-hmm. that people don't know. And it makes sense for relationships, business, partnership, all those things.
And so what sparked your interest in this? I know you said you got into
about 4 years ago. Well, just trying to, I like helping people, right?
Okay, right.
So for me, I'm always curious about, you know, like Tony Robbins was a big inspiration of mine. I'm like, damn, how is this guy so passionate? Like, where does he get it from? You know, you see someone like Steve Jobs, you see someone like Walt Disney, you know, these powerful people. And so I started doing research like, oh, so Tony Robbins, for instance, I know he's a Pisces like I am. Mm-hmm. His life path number is a 2 like I am. So he's very diplomatic, very tactful in his communication. But his moon sign is an Aries. So when it comes to getting things done and information, he's very like intense. Like
okay.
He want to get it right now. So if I want to help people, I got to know everything about them in my mind.
Right.
Because I want to know who I'm really dealing with, not who I think I'm dealing with based on what they do and how they're coming off.
And I remember you, I think our first in-depth conversation about this over the course of the show was, I think it was in Hilton Head. We were like working out together in the gym.
Yeah.
And you brought up life path number, right? So how do you calculate a life path number?
Yeah. So life path number would be your month,
okay,
your day, and your year. So no number can go above a 9. So it's numbers from 1 to 9. So basically your birthday is what? April 17th?
April 17th, 1991, yeah.
Right. So then, so we're going to do the year first. We're going to start from right all the way back to left. So okay. 1 plus 9 is 10.
Okay.
10 plus 9 is what? 19.
Yep.
Plus 1 is 20.
Yep.
So then we have the 2. Because 20, so you would do 2 plus 0,
okay.
which is 2.
Gotcha.
So 1 plus 7.
8.
8. So then what's that?
10.
10.
Yeah.
And then 10 plus 4 is what?
It's 14.
Right, you got it? It's cool. We're doing math, baby. We're doing math. Get in here. So then, there we go. We have 14. That
okay.
makes that whole month, day.
And then 1 plus 4 is 5?
Then 1 plus 4 is 5.
Nice.
So 5 represents change, freedom. That's why you travel a lot.
Okay.
And you're very curious.
Yes, it's true.
Also, you like to live life to the fullest.
True.
So eating, drinking, having fun. But when you're focused, you're highly successful.
Okay.
So that's your life path number. So you're going to always be curious. You're probably going to travel a lot.
And what's yours is 2, you said, right?
I'm a 2. So I'm the peacemaker. So I bring the peace. I'm very diplomatic. I bring people together. You know, I'm trying to keep it cool. But then you have your attitude number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you and I have the same attitude number.
What's that? How do you calculate that?
So your attitude number would be your month and your day.
Okay.
So your day is the 17th, right? Mm-hmm. So 1 plus 7.
8.
8 plus 4.
12.
1 plus 2.
3. Okay.
There it is. So attitude 3 is energy is good. And when things happen that hurts you or hinders you, you like make humor about it.
Mm-hmm.
you don't want to, you know.
True.
So you don't really, as far as attitude, you don't play the gray area. You're even white or black. And when you're really mad or upset, people can feel it. So you and I have the same attitude number.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Eric. Brings me to my next question. Have you ever used a dating app before?
Yeah, I have.
I'm sure the one that you used was Bumble, right?
I have been on Bumble before.
And I'm sure this is probably pre-show. I mean, I'm guilty of using it too.
It's all right.
Tell me about one of your experiences using Bumble.
Bumble's hard. It was hard in the beginning because you have to wait for the female to like you.
Right. So, and then message you, right?
Yes.
But that can be a good thing, I think.
If you're not getting no hits.
Oh, I'm sure you didn't have any problem getting hits on Bumble, Eric. Let's be honest.
Or then someone likes you and
doesn't message you.
Then yeah, it's like, what are we doing?
What's like, why'd you like me in the first
place?
What's
the purpose? But yeah.
So let's hear a story. Have you ever met up with a girl from Bumble? Again, it could be.
No, I haven't.
Okay, really? Never? Okay.
No. How about you?
I have, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Only a handful. Again, this
only
was
a handful.
Years ago.
Okay.
But the nice thing about Bumble is you don't have to just meet people of the opposite sex to go on dates with them, right? There are other options that you can, other benefits you can reap from using Bumble. So you can use it as a dating app, which Eric has used to minor success. I've used to a little bit better, but again, you know, it's all within the beholder. There's also the Friend Finder app. So, you know, say you move to a new city and you're just trying to find some new friends to hang out with. I think we can all attest that one of the biggest fears of moving is not necessarily having people to hang out with. And that's what's great about Bumble is it allows you the opportunity to meet people organically in the sense that, you know, you don't always want to go to a bar. Sometimes you want to be able to meet and have a conversation before meeting face to face. So you have the Bumble Friend Finder. And then say you're in a profession where networking is pretty important as well, or you're just interested in meeting like-minded folks who kind of share the same career hobbies as you. And, you know, you can jump on Bumble. What is it? Bumble Business Networking. So there's three components to it: Bumble Dating, Bumble Best Friend, and Bumble Business, where you're able to meet and talk to people, you know, fellow socialites, fellow business people just like yourself. Or, you know, if you're looking to find the next love of your life instead of going on a TV show, you're more than able to go on Bumble and find them there. And if you go on bumble.com/Dean and download the app, you can start bumbling and start finding new friends, new business colleagues, whatever it is. So bumble.com/Dean, be sure to get on there and start bumbling. All right, so last week in studio, as you guys all know, we had my roommate and Dr. V, who left me with a homework assignment, which was to compile a list of 10 fears that I have in dating. I did just that, maybe to a lesser extent. I was only able to get a couple of them. I hope she's not going to be angry at me. But we're going to get her back on the phone. We're going to go and dissect them a little bit and kind of see what advice she has for me moving forward. Hey, Dr. V, it's Dean from iHeartMedia. I suck at dating. What's up, girl?
What's going on?
Dr. V, don't forget PG-rated podcast here.
Yeah, that.
That's all right. We have a certain number of beeps, and we've already used two of them. So
okay, I'll be good.
How are you?
I'm good. I want to know how you're doing, and did you do your assignment? Did you comply with your homework?
I tried to comply. I've compiled a short list, shorter than you wanted it to be, but
jeez.
I did write a few things down.
Okay, let's hear it.
So the homework was, just to refresh the listeners, to write down 10 fears that I have in dating, right?
I said 10?
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. Thank God you shortened that list. You're smart. Go ahead.
I wrote three so we could dissect them a little bit more fully.
Great. Three. Okay.
All right, so the first one that I wrote, and I actually just wrote these when I got into the studio today, is loving and not being loved back.
Yeah. That is a real fear, and I'll tell you, reciprocation is not love. It isn't. You own your love. Your love is yours. And nobody can take that away from you. Okay. What do you think about that?
I think that's a good point. I forgot to mention, actually, Dr. V, that I have a co-host in studio with me today, Eric Bigger from iSeason. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
Eric, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? How you feeling?
We're all here.
I love the energy.
What's that saying? You are who you love, not who loves you. Hmm. And that is so important to realize. You're able to really take your power back from a real place of unconditional love. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, I digress. I'm getting very philosophical. So
no,
you're afraid of not being loved back.
Yes.
But reciprocation is not love. So I just want you to think about that.
Say it.
And you're not You know, you are who you love, not who loves you back.
So let's talk about that for a second. What do you mean by you are who you love?
You are who you love. And when you examine who you love, think about the amazing insights you have about you. Think about all the people are you dating anyone now? Of course not. You suck at it. Okay. So think about all of the people you have dated in the past.
Okay.
And think about who they are as people.
Oh, there's coming.
And what you loved about them. You are who you love.
So I am who I love, but not who I date.
Well, it's okay. So now that's something different. Are you dating and you're just looking to hook up with people, or are you looking to be in love? And I'll tell you, biology bears out that you're looking to be in love.
Mm-hmm. We all are.
As much as you want to be cool and say you're dating because you want to be in love. So let's get back to the question. When you think about your past relationships, when you think about that, were they people? What kind of people were they? It says a lot about who you are.
Positive, outgoing, fun, I think.
They were positive, they were outgoing, they were fun.
But that doesn't necessarily solve the fear that I have of loving someone and not being loved back. My
so how
point
does
is
receive love.
Is like I want to give my full heart to someone, right? And I'm guessing my fear is giving my full heart to someone and not getting their full heart back.
What I'm trying to explain to you is that is a vulnerability, and it's worth the risk. You need to be more courageous, because reciprocation is not love. Who gives a shit about the other person and what they give back to you? Your love is yours.
But if you
continue loving them.
All right.
Everyone's fear is that they won't be loved back.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an enormous undertaking. Number one, maybe you don't feel worthy of love. You don't feel worthy of that. And if you don't feel worthy of love, you're always going to be rejecting it.
That's actually
But I'm trying to help you with that fear of, you know, having it not be reciprocated. I'm trying to help you with that saying, look, it's your love. You own it.
You want to know what's funny about that? It's a perfect transition into my second fear, which is inadequacy.
Yep. Inadequacy.
In the sense that I think it's kind of human nature to go around comparing yourself to other people, right? And so if I'm in a relationship, I kind of look at myself, I kind of compare myself to other potential suitors for the person that I'm dating, right? And seeing where I stack up in that kind of hierarchy, right? So maybe that's kind of a derivative of the loving and not being loved back.
Give me examples. I want examples of what exactly your inadequacies.
So you met Jackson last week, right? Great guy, super good looking, very outgoing.
Jackson's great.
Super smart, right, exactly. And so maybe like say I'm dating someone, right, and I introduce them to Jackson, and I kind of like look at Jackson, and I'm like, damn, Jackson's way cooler than I am. He's way more like dateable than I am, right? So it's like a feeling of inadequacy that I sometimes have when I introduce maybe someone that I'm dating or whatever it is. Just that's just a for instance, of course, but.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is deep. I just am wondering, where did you first start feeling these feelings of inadequacy?
I have no idea. I'm just talking about them for the first time right now. So
I think it's amazing. I think to be so insightful about yourself and what your fears are, and that you feel unworthy of love and that you feel inadequate. I mean, but at the same time, how relatable are you? Because everybody feels that way. I feel inadequate. You know, I feel unworthy. Everybody feels that. And that's a real feeling. And I guess, are there any ideas that you might have for yourself, like maybe mantras that you could say in those moments of feeling of inadequate? What, you know what I mean? Like, what could you say to yourself?
Hmm.
I love coping cards.
Yeah. Are you talking about like pre-interview type stuff where you go in front of the mirror and you like raise your hands in the air and you say, I am powerful.
God.
I am wonderful.
Okay. So I'm glad you brought that up, because let me tell you something. Power posing was huge. It was huge, huge, huge. But psychology has an enormous reproducibility issue. They couldn't reproduce that study a couple of years later. So you have to be careful with psychology. So the answer to that is absolutely not. I do not expect you to do that. And sometimes when people look in the mirror and they try to validate themselves, if they don't believe what they're saying, it makes it worse. That's why I like coping cards. So for example, for you, I would want you to put actually, I'm going to ask you if, in two words, if you could tell your younger self something, what would it be? I'll give you an example. Mine would be fear nothing.
Okay. That's a good one.
What would yours be?
Eric, what do you think? Do you want to chime in on this one?
Yeah, Eric, where are you in this conversation?
I mean, I'm letting you get it all out because I have so many questions, but, you know, the show goes on.
Eric's really falling asleep.
No, I'm listening, you know. I'm seeking to understand and to be understood. I'm trying to understand your point. So you said your fear of nothing, that was your coping card?
Yeah, that would be that. Well, that would be the two words I would say to my younger self would be fear nothing.
I would say,
yours be?
Embrace who I am. Just embrace it.
Embrace who I am. That's three. It needs to be two.
Say that again.
Come on, Eric. It's three words. Embrace who I am.
Oh, two words.
Two words.
Embrace self, I guess.
Love thyself. Love thyself.
Yes. Embrace self. I love that.
Dean,
what would yours be?
How about like don't waver, I would say would be mine.
Don't waver.
Mm-hmm.
You would say that to your younger self.
Yeah, because sometimes I notice myself being a bit of a pushover at times, which I find that as a positive quality in certain instances, but there are times mm-hmm. where I wish I didn't waver in the face of some mm-hmm. adversity, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So that's where that comes from. And it's funny, too, because as we move on to the third fear that I have, the third and final fear that I wrote down, it kind of is intertwined with the first two. And what I wrote down was opportunity cost. So I'm looking at, obviously not like a relationship like a business, but say I'm dating someone and then back to, again, the feeling of inadequacy. If they could, if the person that I'm dating foreseeably could get something more out of the relationship from someone else, I almost feel like I'm doing a disservice to the person that I'm dating by sticking in that relationship, if that makes sense.
So you push them away.
Yeah, I guess I slowly gravitate away from
it. So it's your way. Can you just say that again? Because it sounds like it's your coping method for one and two. I'm not sure, but say it again. Your third fear?
I feel like if I'm not making the person that I'm dating as happy as they need to be in their life and someone else could make them happier, it's kind of like me looking at it as then they should be in a relationship with someone else because they could be happier with someone else. And I think that boils back down to the feeling of inadequacy in that sense.
Way of pushing the other person away. You know what I mean?
So you're saying that's the root of it is the pushing of away of whoever it is that I'm with.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're saying, and by the way, how would you know if they're not happy? Are you asking them?
I mean, that's the thing.
Are you thinking for them?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, here's what I want to tell you, Dean. You are enough. You are enough. And I'm sorry you don't feel that way. And I'm trying to figure out ways for you to overcome some of these fears. Do you have any ideas?
I think I need to improve my self-worth a little bit.
How could you do that?
Hmm.
Would you put your coping card in your pocket when you need it and say, don't waver?
If you think that's a constructive practice, I'm willing to put...
I love coping cards. I think they're awesome.
Okay. I'll put a coping card in my wallet today, and I'll see how it goes.
Don't put it in your wallet. It needs to be, like, in your pocket.
I'll put it
to be where you can gather it.
I'll put it where my driver's license sits so I can pull my wallet out, and it's through that transparent little slip. It's a quick reminder.
Okay. So, Justin, wrap up. Your number one was...
Loving and not being loved.
Loving and not being loved.
Yes.
You now understand that reciprocation is not love.
Correct.
Just think on that.
Okay, well.
You don't have to do anything. Just think on that. Number two was what?
Inadequacy.
Oh, yeah. That's such a big one. And number three?
Opportunity cost.
And so what you're going to do is you're going to put don't waver on a coping card.
Okay.
And you're going to see how you feel in those times of insecurity and fear.
Okay. Perfect example of this. I'm going to give an example that happened to me over the weekend. It wasn't a dating example or anything like that, but I was boarding a flight from Minneapolis to Edmonton. It's a 4-hour flight, something like that.
Okay, it's already wrong. It's already wrong. This is already going bad.
No,
go ahead.
It's not bad. I purposefully booked the exit row because I'm, you know, 6'2", 6'2 and a half. I have long legs, and I need the extra leg space. And I go to my exit seat, and someone's sitting in my seat, and she looks at me, and she goes, is this your seat? And I said, yes, that's my seat. Can I sit there? And she goes, oh, I want to sit next to my husband. Can you sit in my seat? And points, like, across the hall in, like, one of the regular size seats. And I'm, like, looking at her, and I look at her seat, and I look back at her, and I look back at the seat, and, like, it's a small seat. I'm not going to have any room. It's a long flight. And I look at her, and I go, yeah, that's fine. I'll sit in your seat. And I sat down in my seat, and I was like, damn it, I shouldn't have sat in this seat. I should have just taken my exit row seat back. And in that instance, I wish I didn't waver, because the flight, I mean, obviously, I got to where I was trying to go, and this is a very, like, elementary example of this, but I was a little angry at myself.
Well, you're bringing up a great issue. How do we negotiate our needs? How do you negotiate your needs? And so for you, it almost feels like you talk about it as an all or nothing. You know, don't waver. You know, don't give that person the seat. And I know that you're not doing that, but I'm wondering if that black and white thinking, you need to think of it differently. Like, how do you negotiate your needs?
Okay.
And do you negotiate your needs effectively? Which I'm hearing you say that you don't. You don't negotiate your needs effectively. But the point that I'm making is that you need to think of it as a negotiation.
Within myself.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, within yourself.
Okay.
And with the other person.
Okay.
It's a negotiation. So what would you have – and a lot of times when we don't know how to negotiate our needs, we don't have an emotional narrative around it. We don't have language around it. So what would you have said to that woman if you could go back in time and redo it? What would you do?
I thought about it a lot, actually, while I was sitting on the flight. And what I should have done was a solid compromise was – had them, her and her husband, sit in the row that I was in, and then me and the guy that was sitting next to me would have taken the exit row.
So you would have, instead of caving, you would have problem solved.
Compromised, yeah. So that way she still
get
what she wants and I still get what I want. Right?
You have the ability to problem solve and negotiate your needs. And you need to be able to believe that within yourself. You know, that being said, if you don't think you're worthy of love, if you feel you're a pushover.
Not worthy of that exit row.
And not worthy of that exit row. You have to get rid of that narrative.
All right.
You're telling yourself a bunch of lies and you're believing them.
Okay. So, Dr. V, this is what I'm going to do. I'm gonna go down and write "Don't waver" on my coping card. I'm going to stick it in my wallet. Whenever I feel myself, I guess, succumbing to doing something that I don't necessarily want to do, I'll pull it out and I'll remind myself of how I'm supposed to cope with the situation, right?
But remember, because the idea is don't waver, but also keep in mind that that doesn't mean to be a hard ass.
Okay.
Because then you have the problem the other way. That's why it's important to think about your process as a negotiation. And you have those problem skills, Dean. It's amazing to me. You know, you're able to do that. You just need to believe that you're capable of doing that.
I believe. I'm going to start believing more. Dr. V.
Woo! Thanks for the call.
Progress. Dr. V, you're great. Thank you for taking the time to come back.
No,
that's saying
so
something
much.
Right there.
You guys are, Eric, it was really nice meeting you. Is he still
Dr. V, I'm here.
Woo!
I'm here, baby.
Okay.
I'm here.
Thank you.
I'm here. We can have a long conversation at some point.
At some point. I think you guys would have a lot to talk about, but
yeah.
That's maybe for another episode. Dr. V, thank you so much again for taking the time to jump
so
on the phone.
Thank you so much. Already. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye. Take care. Have a great day. So, Eric, you were pretty quiet during that conversation. What do you think about
all
that?
Yeah, well, you know, I was trying to take everything in that she was giving you in the moment, and I realize this about you on the show because I think I always say, if you spot it, you got it, right? So on the show, you waver from who you are and accepting you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you mentioned the airplane incident where you wanted to exit seat because you have long legs and someone took your seat and then you were mad at yourself. So the question I will have you to ask is, why did you avoid yourself in that moment when you really needed that seat?
I mean, of course, I didn't need the seat, right? It would have been a nice luxury to have been able to stretch out my legs a little bit. And honestly, I think I was totally okay with it. But what really put me off at the end of it was when we were getting up to leave the plane, the exit seat was kind of like right across, maybe like back one row from where I was sitting. And I didn't even get a thank you, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, right. Thank someone for kind of like doing that for you, right? If they thanked me, I would have been like, oh, of course. Like, I'm more than happy to accommodate you and let you sit next to your husband, that sort
right.
of thing. But again, like I want to be accommodating to people, right?
Yeah, but you're really good at that. Well,
Thanks.
How about people accommodating to you?
I just think that I'm very low maintenance, so I don't necessarily need quite as much accommodations as the next person.
And then the question would be why? And then you laugh, right?
So I have this. I've always had this kind of mentality, and I've kind of gotten away from it in recent years. But from maybe like a 16 to 24 year old, again, as foolish as I was during those times, I would always justify things by saying, no matter the moment that you're going through, no matter the level of discomfort that you have, when you get to the end of it, it's gonna be over anyways, right? So the stuff that you have to endure during it, as long as it's not extremely bad, it's okay, because once you get to the end of it, it's over and it doesn't make a difference as to how you got to where you are at that point, right? So the 3 or 4 hours of discomfort that I had on the plane had really no bearing on me arriving in Edmonton or Canada, where I was traveling to. And so that's kind of how I looked at it. And I've always kind of had that mindset. So that's kind of why I was okay with giving it up. But then at the same time, you know, again, you're like, okay, like I went out of my way to book that seat so I could stretch out and be more comfortable, et cetera.
Got it.
Yeah.
So if I can give you share some of my experiences.
Please.
With myself. So, prior to the show, I was a yes man.
Yeah.
Said yes to everything. Didn't know how to say no. And the reason being because when I was a child, I was avoided. I was neglected.
Okay.
So I figured, oh, okay, if I'm neglected, then maybe I should just give to everybody else. And my needs and wants are not as important. So subconsciously, I became this person who, if you needed something, but I really needed it, but I felt like you needed it more than me, mm-hmm. well, that's what I was thinking. I would give up my needs for mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
And so what happens is you get to a point where people start using that behavior against you.
Right.
And then you're always getting shorter than the stick because you're not being responsible for your feelings and how you feel.
Right.
So on the show, it opened me up to be responsible for my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to date you and I don't want to date this person, or this is how I really feel. I don't want to talk today.
Right.
But I would talk prior to the show because I wanted to please everybody. I want everyone to make happy. Like, you wanted to please that lady on the plane because you felt like she needed it more than you. But
right.
honestly, in the back of your mind, you really wanted that seat. So I think for you is go back into your childhood or your experience where did that turning point happen when you thought you was last and mm-hmm. not first
mm-hmm.
in your feelings.
Right.
And I think for relationships and dating, that's what you got to understand and make a decision. Like, these are my feelings. Even if it might hurt the person, it's still your truth.
Right.
Like, I feel this way in this moment. And, you know, because at the end of the day, relationships should be unconditional, not conditional.
Right.
And I feel like on the show, people talk about when Bachelor in Paradise,
yeah.
you had options and people made you feel a certain way. I mean, you made the girls feel a certain way. But at the end of the day, if you reverse roles and you put a girl in your situation, you put two hot guys around them. The decision might be difficult, but we all should love and appreciate people unconditionally.
Right. It's definitely, especially in this situation too, from The Bachelorette to Bachelor in Paradise and moving forward, is like we're kind of set up in a spot to be loved conditionally, like you're saying. So it's
right.
conditional love. They'll love you until they hate you sort of thing, right?
Right.
And it's weird because they only see a certain side of everything, so they only love you for certain reasons, not for your full self. And I think the point that I wanted to make when you said that you were a yes man for so long,
yeah.
you kind of lose sight of what you need to make you happy, right? When you're
right.
constantly doing things to make other people happy for their own benefit, you kind of lose sight of what you need for yourself.
And then everybody else does too.
Right.
And then it becomes like a process of consistently giving you what you don't want and
right.
need because they're so used to you giving. Like, oh, Dina, take me to the airport. Dina, do this. Dina, do that. And you'd be like, damn, can I just get a thank you? Get some acknowledgement. But they don't know because you're not letting them know because you're not talking about your feelings. So that's where vulnerability comes in, is telling them about your feelings.
So let's go back to the airplane example then. Do you think I should have gotten off the airplane, had after not being thanked, should I have turned to the woman who I let sit in my seat and said, you owe me a thank you?
No, you should have nipped it in the bud in the beginning.
So I just learned.
Honestly, I have long legs. But we can figure something out. But I really need this seat.
Yeah.
But I can help you find a better seat. You got to, because at the end of the day, once you tell her about your feelings, she's going to give you the answer to the solution. She's going to give you the solution
That's
because you're vulnerable. Like, this is how I feel.
And I guess she's looking at it as a thing that she's moving to some other location. But if you open about your feelings about how you feel, then she's like, oh, wait, this is actually a human.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of impacting them in maybe the not most
because
positive
you
way.
Give her information she never had.
That's a good point.
Information changes situations.
I guess the more you begin to humanize yourself to other people, the more
yeah.
they can make decisions.
Like, you could be like, I remember my actual question like 2 weeks ago. And he was like, oh, man, I don't know. But you never gave me a direct answer.
I'm so bad at that.
You kept it general. And I'm like, Dean, just make a decision. Just tell me no. Bro, this doesn't work for me. I'm like, great. I'm happy to do that for you. Okay, cool. We won't do it. But I understand you, so I knew how to move on.
I appreciate you working with me.
Yeah, because that's what it's about. It's not about me. It's about we.
Yeah.
It's a us thing, a we thing, not an I thing.
Yeah.
Teamwork. But you got to be able to delegate and tell people the truth directly. Like, this is how I feel.
Do you think that you're a decisive person?
Now I am.
No?
Because I can respond to my feelings and say, this is what I want, this is what I don't want.
How new is that? Is that within the past 4 years as you've kind of begun to explore?
No, this is since the show.
Okay, really?
So what happened was the turning point for me in the show was when I got into it with everybody.
Okay.
They were taking advantage.
In the mansion, like last week in the mansion.
They were taking advantage of me.
Yep.
I'm so nice, I'm so kind. Yeah. But then I had to tell how I felt. And then they felt it.
Mm-hmm.
They got it. And that's when I transformed.
Right.
Because I was holding on to my real feelings my whole life. Because I grew up in an environment that was negative. My mom didn't give me the feelings, you know. So I was just holding. Then when I let it out, life changed.
Yeah. You kind of like allow yourself to be a doormat for so long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know. So uncomfortable.
But at the same time, I feel like there's definitely a happy medium to make other people happy around you, because I feel like you especially, and maybe the people that you surround yourself with are more, they're able to endure a lot more, right? Like people are so fragile and vulnerable all the time. And I feel like as a strong individual like you or the people that you surround yourself by, like you're able to deal with more, I guess, tribulation than the other person. So you're kind of willing to take a little bit more of the heat for certain things, right? And so when you look at it like that, you're able to justify by being like, okay, like I'll take this hit because I don't think that they'd be able to handle it quite as well, sort of thing.
Right. But see, I was doing it because of what I wasn't getting, because I'm afraid I was going to lose people.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I am a nice person, I'm a giving person, but I would have friends I wouldn't want to let go because I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to lose people. So I wouldn't be vulnerable enough to tell them why.
Right.
I had to move on.
Right.
On a relationship.
Yeah.
Like the relationship prior to the show, I always made it make sense why I was moving on.
Okay.
But I wasn't giving them my vulnerability.
Right.
Because when I was feeling the love, I was running because I didn't understand it. But now I can go back and say, oh, I see what I was doing. I was protecting myself because I didn't have information about love.
You did grow a lot. I mean, just from an audience perspective, you did grow a lot from limo to Spain, right?
Oh, man, it was transformed.
Yeah.
I didn't conform. I transformed because it was necessary.
Yeah.
I had to.
Yeah. I think there is definitely something to say, the conform and not transform. You didn't really allow yourself to get kind of caught up in everything after that moment of the clarity in the mansion or whatever it was. But how has that kind of transformed your life post-show? I know you've probably done a million interviews like this, and I hate to even ask, but like,
so good.
How do you use that type of stuff to be more, I guess, embracing in a, like a romantic relationship? Your friendships are getting better, of course, because you can be more decisive and you can be more clear about your own feelings. But how does that affect you more romantically, I guess?
I've just been open and honest of where I'm at, what I want, and what I need.
Mm-hmm.
There's no in-between. It's even this or that for me.
And I think, again, as the audience members can remember, is you fell in love for the first time meeting Rachel. So do you think that whole experience has allowed you and enabled you to fall in love more deeply or more quickly or more, I guess,
I know
purely?
How to get there now.
Yeah?
I know how to get there.
Okay.
I can get there. I know how to go deep and fast if I have to.
Mm-hmm.
But I realize about me, I love hard. I love deep. Like, I'm even all in or I'm not at all.
Mm-hmm.
I can't play the middle.
Okay.
And so prior to the show, I was so intense with love and what I wanted that sometimes it's intimidating to some women because they don't understand it.
Right.
They're like, why is this? Are you too good to be true? Or are you doing this because you want something from me? And then they always come back. And I'm like, oh, I'm not there.
Because they're not getting it from anyone else. Right.
Right. But it's emotional. They're emotional unavailable.
Okay.
I'm emotional.
Right.
Unavailable.
Right.
And so I'm learning how to not, you know, take a dial back, but just understand who I'm giving to.
Right.
Because I would give with no anticipation of getting back.
I think that speaks a lot, too. You're not going to waste your own time, but most importantly, you're not going to waste someone else's time.
Right.
And I think that's definitely a great quality to have, especially when trying to find someone, whether you're dating casually or finding, you know, the next wife or husband or whoever it is. Is you're willing to dive in fully head first and commit yourself to that person emotionally.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of sparse these days, and it's kind of lacking.
And that's what I need, emotion. I don't the tangible stuff. I need intangible stuff for my love.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. But that's when you have the five love languages where some people...
What is yours, by the way?
Mine's is acts of service, and now it's communication.
Okay.
Before it was acts of service, and I believe... No, quality time.
Quality time.
So quality time is big. I love spending time with people.
Yeah.
Like, I love it.
That's I definitely see that. That
I
makes
need
sense.
It. You know, it's like, I don't have to talk to a girl for a whole week if I spend one time with you. Oh, I'm going to make that time like it's forever.
Right. So the active service is kind of pertaining to you want your emotions to
be. I don't
want
a person to think about something. I want them to think about it before I have to think about
right.
it.
Right.
So I know Dean likes water.
Sure.
I'm
going
to get him water, and I'm going to get him some new Vans and a skateboard. But see, that's
I'm a happy man.
Paying attention to my wants and needs. I'm like, oh, you did that for me without me asking.
Because
you?
That means that they're caring even when they're not thinking
they're
about it.
They're paying attention to you, and they're making it about you in the moment that they're giving you love. And that's how I need to be loved.
Yeah, so I guess that brings us at the top of the podcast. I mentioned that this is the week of the anniversary of my mother passing away 11 years ago this week. And I've traveled a lot this weekend, and it's funny. So I had a lot of time to sit on the airplane basically by myself listening to my music. A lot of self-reflection, a lot of thinking. And honestly, I cried a lot on the airplane by myself multiple times. I think one of my connecting flights through Detroit, I was just sitting there, and I like start bawling, and like, I look at the guy next to me, make sure he's not looking at me. And I take my next flight to Edmonton, and I'm like, I start crying again. I'm like, why am I crying? And I was like thinking about this, and I actually wanted to bring it up, and I think you're the perfect person to bring it up with because you can kind of diagnose it a little bit. I was looking back at my childhood and my relationship with my mother, and I think that at the end of the day, I had incredibly strong attachment issues to her. I would get to the point where I don't think I was able to sleep over at friends' houses until I was like 12 or 13 years old because I was so afraid of being away from her. It got to the point where she would call me and leave me voicemails after she was initially diagnosed, and I would save those voicemails for years and years and years. Just so I would always have like an outlet to hear her voice whenever I wanted to hear it. Mm-hmm. And let's see, I was trying to think of what else I was kind of thinking about. I guess I wanted to touch on a little bit about, and this is kind of off topic, about like what it takes to be a good child, right? So I was thinking about back when my mother got her breastectomy when I was 11 to kind of combat the breast cancer that she had. And how I don't think that I was necessarily there for her emotionally. I was kind of like off the cuff about it, and I wasn't as supportive of as I wanted to be. And then I remember her getting her going through her chemo process. She was bald, and she was very self-conscious about the way that she looked because she, you know, spent her entire life having this long hair, and she just didn't have it anymore. And I remember like looking at her, and she was like thinking, she's like, "Oh, like I feel so bad, like uncomfortable in my own skin." I remember like looking at her, I was like, "Mom, you're so beautiful. Like you're bald, and you're still like the most beautiful woman in the entire world." And I feel like as I went through the phases of her illness personally, starting off as being very jovial and kind of off the cuff about it, I transitioned to being very emotionally there for her. Like she worked a night job from, I would say she worked from like 11 p.m. until 7 a.m. every week. She owned her own cleaning business. That way she could spend the days with the kids. And I would constantly go to her to work with her so I could like just spend more time with her before. Because she was very clear of kind of the end that was quickly approaching, and I was a little bit less aware about it. But yeah, I guess to all of that, I kind of came to this realization throughout the traveling this past weekend, and I do get emotional this time of year every year, that I did have very strong like emotional attachment to her, like stronger than I could really think of. And I guess I just don't really know how that translates into my love life now, if so at all.
Yeah. So I think usually, you know, as men, we crave the love that a mom gave us or mm-hmm. who our mom is. So I think for you in a relationship, you need that attachment you had to your mom. You need someone to love you like that, because that's going to make you, you're going to have to respond to them because they're giving you what you always gave your mom, which mm-hmm. strong emotions.
Right.
And so I think that's more the fear, because you don't know if someone can be that potent or that powerful when it comes to that. But you know how you get to that point. You know how you just said this whole week you were crying mm-hmm. and you were emotional. That's how you get to that point with a female. You show her that. And when you show her that, she has to give you that.
But what if she doesn't? What if it's a person that I really enjoy spending time with? Like I see the signs of myself falling in love with someone, right? And then I open up about something like that. Like maybe like the most important thing to me in my life, or like the most emotional experience I've ever had, right? And right. And they don't give me the love back that I need them to. Then what does that tell me about that relationship?
But what is the love you're looking for? Is that the question?
Maybe someone like that can sympathize and like be like, it's going to be okay. Like, I'm here for you. I don't understand. Like, I can see what you're going through. Like, I'm here for you. That type of stuff. Like, say that maybe I need more. Like, say I'm not getting what I think I need from it, you know, and that only that capacity. But again, it's like such a big part of who I've like become today. And so like, should that be a signal as to whether it's a relationship worth continuing?
If you understand, because what I'm saying? That's major for you. What? That's like, that's it. Like, if you don't have that portion of the relationship, mm-hmm. it's not going to evolve. That's important. You need that for your livelihood, for your health, for your well-being. Because in relationships, the reason relationships won't work for some people, because they're getting their wants, but they're not getting their needs. Mm-hmm. So a person might, you know, Sally over here might be emotional, but Jack is not.
Right.
But Jack might be intimate and Sally's not.
Right.
So now they're missing each other mm-hmm. because their needs are not getting met. That's a need for you in a relationship. But the only way to get that fulfilled, if you have to communicate that to the person,
right.
that this is a need, this is a priority, I need these in relationships. Like me, I need someone who can stimulate my mental, someone who is emotional like I am, because I feel like, oh, they're there.
But back to your point about the love languages, the acts of service, you want someone to be there without you having to tell them that you need them to be there, right? So in this instance, it's like I kind of want someone to want to be there instead of me having to be like, I need you to be here for me. I want that person to come to me and be like, hey, I know this is a difficult time for you. I know you're struggling with this. I know you're emotional and I'm here for you. Like, I want to talk about it. I don't want to have to go to that person and be like, hey, like, can you be here for me? Like, I want someone to go out on their own and kind of like understand that's what I need at that moment, you know?
Right. Well, you would have to communicate that, because sometimes as men, we can show that we might not need that, but we really want it. Because mm-hmm. it's even ego, pride, or we're too masculine to let someone in and let us know. So when you communicate that, now it's on them. And if they don't show you that, you don't got to directly communicate it. They would just pick up on it if they're aware enough. Mm-hmm. But they have to know at some point. Because they look at you like, oh, Dean's a handsome guy. He's tall. He can get whatever he wants. You know, he's strong. But inside, you might be hurt.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all about communication. Communication is key. Communication rules the nation. Like, what are we doing here? We're communicating. You know?
Yeah, but no, I understand what you're saying. And remind us, because you didn't have necessarily the strongest relationship with your mother growing up, right?
No, I didn't. I didn't get no emotions. My mom didn't, how was your day, son? Or I didn't get the feedback. I didn't get emotional support.
So
she did the physical. She provided food. Yeah. She took me to school. You know, she paid this and that. You know, she showed me mannerisms and you should have, you know, do this and do that, call this person Mr. and Mrs. But I didn't get the intimate conversations that we're having right now until the show.
Right.
You know? But that's how I broke through, because 8 months prior to the show, we started having these crucial conversations about, mom, you can't keep doing this to me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have an unhealthy conversation with my mom. But this is the thing. People have to understand that in order to have healthy relationships, you got to have unhealthy conversations sometimes. Unhealthy conversation is nothing but crucial conversations, talking about the things you don't want to talk about.
Sure. So has your relationship with her progressed post show?
Oh yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, because we have more clarity, have more understanding. And that's what, you know what I was missing from her?
Mm-hmm.
Information.
Like why she was doing what she was doing.
And I said, mom, you had me at 21. What were you going through?
Sure.
How did that make you feel? And I said, you're my mom. I love you unconditionally. Yeah. I forgive you. I don't hold it against you, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here today. You made me who I am today because you didn't allow me to depend on a female to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
You allowed me to go and be a man at an early age and grow up.
Who was your emotional outlet as a child? It was your aunt, I think, right?
No. I
really
have an emotional outlet. It was just basketball. Right. Basketball really like saved my life because it gave me, I created friends. I got attention. I did good in school. So the thing about me, I was good in my environment, but my environment was bad. So all the kids who were doing negative things were getting all the attention. I was doing the positive things, and I wasn't getting attention. Because if you get in trouble, you go, you know, you got to pay attention to them. But I was a good kid. I was responsible. So, oh, Eric's fine. He's cool.
Yeah.
But Eric needed a lot of love.
Right.
I wasn't getting it. But I had to grow up, and I figured out my mom was going through something. And I also learned from some of my family members, they don't know how to give emotional support because they didn't get it.
Right.
So I couldn't blame them.
Kind of like a perpetual cycle.
So basically what I'm doing is breaking the curse. We're getting, you know, that's what it's about.
And it's all sparked from conversation, information.
And that's why with your dad or with your mother-in-law, you got to have these conversations because they have information about genetics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have cancer that's hereditary, you know, have heart problems. But if you don't have information from your family, you can't better the circumstance or the situation because you don't know, like, oh, I didn't know this was a thing for our family.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There are times, too, and I've talked about this a little bit openly. I still don't have a relationship with my father at all.
Right.
He texted me for the first time post-show 2 days ago, and he said, hey, I have an $800 bill from Verizon. Is this your fault? And I said, no. And then that was the end of it. So we still don't have a relationship, right? It still irks me the wrong, like rubs me the wrong way when he reaches out first thing saying something like that.
Yeah.
Because I want it to be more like, hey, son, like, how are you? What's going on? And I do kind of resent myself at certain times for not being more inclined to spark the relationship with him like you did with your mother. I think that's great.
So me and my dad apologized to me.
Mm-hmm.
I could have cried on national TV. I was like, it threw me off in the moment. I'm like, what?
He apologized on TV or after?
Yeah, on TV. Yeah. If the clip, you see the clip, he apologized in that moment. And our relationship prior to that wasn't the best because he wasn't there either like I wanted him to be.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have guidance. He was a provider, but he wasn't a guider. You give me the sneakers, give me the video games. He didn't spend time.
Yeah.
He would come to my games. E, do this. I'm like, dad, you never even took me to a basketball court to show me that.
Yeah.
So what are you saying? Like, how can I listen? But you got to understand where he's at. So you got to help him help you help y'all. Because he's already in an age where he don't really want to break his ethics or what he believes in. So you just got to give him love. Because what if he's gone tomorrow? Then what? You don't want to have that conversation. So it's bigger than the both of y'all. It's for the generations, for the family.
Yeah.
So you got to find a way to have a healthy conversation, or just, even if you're like, Dad, I thought about this. This made me think of you. Watch this movie. Or I have a company that's giving me these bracelets. Take these bracelets. Oh, take this movement watch.
Yeah.
You got to break the ice. It's your dad, bro.
All right. So let me ask for some advice on this topic then. So, yeah. So when my mother passed away, right, before she passed away, since we were planning, we kind of knew it was coming, right? She said, I want to be cremated and I want my ashes to be scattered in Hawaii. Uh-huh. And I want you to scatter them as a family, right? And it's been 11 years. So we've had my mother's ashes for, you know, 11 years, almost, over a decade, which is bad in of itself. But this year, I finally have enough money. So I'm taking it upon myself to fly myself and my three siblings out to Hawaii. So her birthday is Christmas, Christmas Day. So we're going to fly out there over Christmas, scatter them on top of a volcano on Christmas Day. But I still haven't really had a conversation with my father, right? I've talked to my siblings about it. They're like, no, don't invite Dad. He's just going to like sully the trip. He's going to make it worse. But at the same time, I feel like he has every right to be there because he was the husband of my mother, right?
Absolutely.
So how do you think I should go about that? Do you think it should be like the amending process? Do you think I should reach out to him and be like, hey, this is my idea. We're doing it. You have the opportunity to come if you want to. But we understand you don't necessarily have to if you don't want to.
Tell him.
Yeah.
And give him the opportunity to come. If he doesn't come, that's not on you. That's on him. Because this is the thing. If you go and you don't tell him, you're going to feel bad at the end of the day once you leave there.
Yeah.
Because it's information. So he has to think about it. It's like, well, I told my friend he shouldn't drink and drive and something happens. At least you told him. Mm-hmm. But if you don't tell him, you got to think about, I didn't even tell him that.
The challenging thing with that, too, is talking to both of my brothers. They're like, no, don't invite him. Like, why would you invite him? He's just going to make the trip so much worse. And I'm like, I know that, but I still think he does have the right.
Yeah, because his energy, you got to think, his energy and your mom's energy created y'all.
True.
So give him the benefit of the doubt and the opportunity to, maybe that might change him. Maybe he's going through something or he didn't get over his fears or his baggage, what he's been through. Like, try to understand who your dad really is, not who you think he is. Because sometimes we put expectation on our parents, how we see life. But how was life for them growing up raising you? You don't really know.
True.
So it's all about seeking to understand, then to be understood.
Yeah.
Because right now, the kids, we always want to be understood. Like, Mom, Dad, you should understand me. I'm your kid. You made me. But sometimes they need to take it back and understand them because
that's a good point.
They might be going through something.
And I guess up until the point they had us and probably about 10 years after that point, we don't really understand who they were as a person, right? Because we don't start remembering until we're 10 years old anyway.
Right, because we're putting them in this box. You're my parent. You should do this. But hold up. Your parent is a person. Mm-hmm. And they have fallacies and rules, and they go through life too. They're not perfect. So it's about understanding what is this behavior coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not getting this? Well, maybe your dad didn't get it, or maybe your mom leaving really hurt him. I mean, who knows? But if you don't have the information, no, you can't really just put judgment on him and say, you're a bad person, you didn't do this.
That's a good point.
It's all about love, bro. At the end of the day, it's all about love. Forget the money, forget the fame, forget anything. It's all about love. This is love right here. We got love, bro. Yeah. Like, from a show because we was trying to find love. No, seriously. This love is changing our life. We went on a show for love and it's changed our life.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
I agree. You're right. For the better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. All right, I think you're right. I think.
But look, tell him. It's not up to what he does. That's on him. You just tell him.
I'll be like, this is what's happening. You're welcome to come.
Absolutely.
Do what you want.
Because you got to be the leader. You got to be the father. Because he don't
be the,
know
be the fire sign.
Yes, the leader. There you go. Aries, dominant. Run it.
All right.
Own it.
We'll circle back on that, I guess, after I invite him and see what he says.
Yeah. Hey, it might be a life-changing experience. You might get a photo and like, hey. We did it, as you told him.
Yeah, so with all of these afflictions, I guess, that we all experience as children, especially through our parents, a good close friend of ours that we met through the season,
Kenny
King, actually lost his mother today as well.
Yeah, due to cancer.
So please send your thoughts and prayers out to him and his family. It definitely cannot be an easy time. And,
right.
You know, no matter what age you are, no matter how old you are when you lose a parent, it's never easy. And I feel awful for that. I just got news of that, too, so... Kenny, we love you.
Yeah, man, we love you, bro.
Might be the most unconditionally loved person coming out of the house. Great kid, great guy.
And you have information because you've been in this process, so you would be able to help him throughout this phase. So
yeah,
that's something you can share. And, you
it's so interesting too because he's got such a strong exterior too.
Yeah,
but we've seen the vulnerable side of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great guy, but yeah. Kenny, we love you. I'm sorry about that. Yep. All right. Well, so don't really know how to transition into this, but. Well, the opposite of all of this, I guess, sadness is fun, right? Maybe a little bit of fab, maybe a little bit of fit. Put it all together. You get fab, fit, fun. We've talked about it before. We're probably going to talk about it a lot more. That's just how fantastic it is. You guys all know that FabFitFun basically sends you the latest in beauty and fashion, fitness, and wellness every single season, once every 3 months, depending on the season, fall, spring, summer, winter. They're going to personally cater a box to you and what you might need for that month. So, for example, some of the products that you would get in this season's box would be the Summer in Rose Black Foldover Clutch, which I actually gave it as a gift to one of my friends, and she's obsessed with it. The Sterling Forever Wishbone Necklace, which is beautiful. The Sponge Gel Body Wash Infused Buffer in French Lavender, which smells delicious. I gave it to my roommate's girlfriend. She's always over the house. I always compliment her on how good she smells, and I think it's because of this. I know it's because of the Sponge Gel Body Wash Infused Buffer. What else do you get? You get the Himalayan Pink Salt Kit, which I gave to my roommate. He loves cooking. It makes the steaks that he cooks on the grill just fantastic. The Anderson Lily Body Oil. All good stuff, all incredible, at an incredible value. I mentioned this last week. You get the box typically for $49.99 per season, but for you, it's even less. If you go to FabFitFun.com and use promo code DEAN, that's D-E-A-N, you get $10 off your very first box. So every box is coming with over a $200 value. You're getting it for $39.99 for your very first season. And again, you get so much incredible stuff. Seasons had this incredible scarf that I literally sleep with every single night. It's so soft. So again, that's FabFitFun.com. And if you use promo code DEAN, you get $10 off your very first box. So don't forget to jump on their website and subscribe, and I promise you won't regret it. So on last week's episode, we proposed the question, do you suck at dating if you only text the person that you're dating? We got a couple of great emails. We're going to have Mark, the producer, read a few of them for us and talk about them a little bit.
Thank you very much. This is from Janie. Hey, Dean.
Hey, Janie.
I personally think that you do suck at dating if you only text the other person. Speaking from experience, things are so easily lost in translation from when texting. For example, tone of voice can be misconstrued all the time. I also feel like it would be really difficult to connect with someone on a deeper level if you're just texting. You wouldn't be emotionally involved in each other.
Mm-hmm. Eric, what do you think?
Yeah. I feel like texting, if you're just texting someone and you're dating them, I think that's not enough for the relationship to be promising. I mean, I think intimate connection, being in someone's energy is important, don't you think? I mean, think about if we just text our whole friendship.
Yeah, I think to me there are two avenues to communication within a relationship when you're not face to face with them, and a lot of it is fillers throughout the day, texting like, "Hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing this. What are you doing later? I'm doing this. What are you having for dinner?" That stuff's all carried over via text. I think that there's a very important aspect of a relationship that maybe is fleeting a little bit nowadays, which is the phone component. Like, I'm personally working on FaceTiming a lot more because you kind of have that obviously the face-to-face. And that's kind of when you can have the deeper conversations, right? Maybe not necessarily the fluff that you have throughout the day.
And just, you know, hearing someone's voice, if you just call, the vibration of someone's voice in your ear that you love and you're into can change your day. Like, man, I just been thinking about you all day. Just want to hear your voice. Hope all is well. You know, have a great week, great day. That's important, even if it's 5 minutes. And then that can lead to, you know what, let's hang out this weekend. And then you don't even have to text because I just called you for 5 minutes and then we made a date for the weekend because you hear my voice.
I think a lot of it boils down to what do you plan on getting out of the dating relationship that you're in, right? If you're looking to just date casually, then texting every day is going to basically fulfill what you're looking for. But if you're looking for a more meaningful relationship, then you want to call them and FaceTime and have those deeper conversations with them. One of the producers in the studio last week mentioned that some of the guys only text her, but one guy called her. She didn't answer. He left a voicemail even. And that sparked her interest so much more than it would have otherwise. Instead of just texting, she heard his voice. He made took the initiative, made the phone call, didn't even get an answer, left a voicemail, which then allowed them to kind of go pursue a relationship from there. So I think there's a lot to be said about moving past just the texting of a relationship.
It's more intimate, and I'm making you a priority through a phone call, not a text. Anybody can text, but a lot of people don't talk on the phone.
I think I've talked about this in past episodes. I'm not much of a phone talker. Whenever I get a phone call, most of me says don't answer it just because I don't like talking on the phone. Even if it's just like a friend or like my brother or something like that, like, I don't really feel like talking right now. But at the end of the day, you do get a lot more out of a phone call than just texting. Yeah. So, yeah.
This is from Tara.
Okay.
Hey, Dean.
Hey. Hey, Tara. What's up, girl?
In my opinion, texting is convenient for all parties and is the easiest way to stay consistent. People naturally hate it when they don't get a response, so it's easier to respond through text than to find time to call. But here's her question. When you're dating someone, is it appropriate to text or communicate with your ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend or any other girl guy outside of the relationship? I respect that the people I date may have friends of the opposite sex, but is it necessary to invest in conversations with people you may have had feelings for or relations with in the past? Help. I don't want to suck in relationships.
Nice. I love it. That's actually a great question. I think that a lot of that comes down to boundaries and conversations, right? So I personally enjoy having friendships with my former girlfriends, but I can understand how that could be off-putting for someone that I'm dating. On the other hand, if a girl that I'm dating or talking to is talking to her ex-boyfriend frequently, I would hate that. So maybe that's a silly double standard that I'm not even recognizing.
Do you voice that if you're in a relationship?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, there we go.
What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think you gotta be open.
Mm-hmm.
So I trust myself to trust my partner or the person I'm dating to say, you know what? If you've been with this person for this long, I'm gonna give you the benefit of the doubt to see if I can really trust you and put it on them.
I think that comes to...
Because I think if you're already telling no, then your insecurities are coming up, and then now you're making it hard for her to be her.
Herself, right.
You know, you don't want to deprive her of being her, because then the relationship is like, oh, okay. And she might, you know, submit to not doing that, but then she might not be feel free when she's not, when she was with guys.
Sure. That makes sense.
You want the person you're dating to be comfortable outside of you if it's another guy involved.
But absolutely.
You definitely boundaries.
I think to your point, though, I trust myself with all those relationships, right? Yeah. So say I'm talking to an ex-girlfriend while I'm dating someone else. I trust myself not to like give in to anything that my ex-girlfriend is doing or saying, whatever it is. But I don't necessarily know if I can trust the other person to do the same. So maybe that's kind of where that mindset comes for me.
And the
from.
Question would be why?
I just think that
if you can do the same, but you don't think they can do the same, why?
I mean, I think that you just can't trust someone wholly until
you said it.
Yeah, it could be that. and just like it's hard to trust someone wholly as soon as you meet them, right? You kind of have to build that trust over time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I trust myself.
I think you have
to,
boundaries for sure.
Right.
But exactly. At the same time, I don't want to, you know, own you and say you can't.
Of course.
It's like, no, live your life.
Right.
Because there's going to be times where I don't want you in my space and I want to be free and have some feminine energy that's friends as well as for that person to have masculine.
I think a negative quality of being a significant other is to be restricting, right? You don't want to restrict someone from talking to someone or doing anything.
Like I said this morning, in order to be me, I have to be free.
Yeah. You say that all the time.
Let's be free.
That's your mantra. All right, well, thank you for writing those emails in. I think there's still a lot left to be said about do you suck at dating if you only text? I think there's a lot more layers to that. Next week, we're going to ask the question, do you suck at dating if you don't take the initiative to make plans yourself? And my perspective is I love it when someone is able to take the initiative and make plans for us, because I think back to what Eric was talking about earlier, I like when someone can kind of provide structure to the week in terms of the relationship, right? I want someone to be like, let's do dinner this day at this time. You're coming. Meet me there. Pick me up, whatever it is.
All right.
So that's what we're going to talk about next week. Do you suck at dating if you don't take the initiative? Email your thoughts, your concerns, your stories, whatever it is, to isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com. I'd like to give one more big thank you to Eric Bigger for being in studio today.
Thanks for having me. Also, Dean, coming up, I'm going to have you on my podcast.
I love that.
Yeah. Help me out. Figure it out.
I don't know what I could help you out with. I think you got me pretty much beat in all areas.
I mean, you're in the podcast world, so you know what you're doing, buddy. You're great at this.
You're the man. I always love to hear your perspective because it is so unique, and yet you're still so passionate about it, which I think it's rare to come by these days. So it's definitely great to get you in here, talk about that a little bit. So this was episode 5 of Help, I Suck at Dating. I'm Dean Unglert, and next week, I hope to suck a little bit less.
Follow Help, I Suck at Dating with Dean Unglert on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.